Welcome, everybody, to another workshop with the Pacific Novel Project, where we go through the workshop process, mostly our novels, me, Jason Keith, and Ghost of Silver Creek, and Steven.
Hello.
And Hollywood Dreams. I'm writing kind of a Western fantasy cyberpunk thing, and he's dropping some Nazi noir.
Yep.
Say that six times fast.
Two turntables and a microphone.
So, yeah, that's what we do. We go here, we read our stories, and we workshop them, point out things that are good, things that are working, things that need work, things that are missing out. We're in our second draft now, and this week I threw a different story at Steve.
He really did.
And I labeled it Untitled. I had a title, but I didn't like the title, so I just changed it to Untitled. And we also do a monthly book club where we read a book and discuss the book. And you can find that at our Patreon website, patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project. A couple dollars a month gets you into the Bring Your Own Book Club podcast. And we also have a tier where you can join us online and discuss the book live before we record it and also get a free book. So if you want to see how you can get free books, head over to patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project. And you know what? We need to put up another photo writing prompt this month too, Steve.
We do. We haven't done it in a little bit, but you know, we don't have any fans. So, but we should probably do one because that might get us fans.
You gotta be consistent. So what it is, it's a writing prompt, but we just use a picture. It's a 200 word short story contest. We're calling it contest because we dream of one day having enough people enter and make submissions for us to give some prizes, preferably in the form of money away.
And people like prizes. I mean, I think they do.
Yeah, some prizes. Like, I wouldn't want the director's cut of, say, The Last Jedi as a surprise.
Yeah. I wouldn't want the Buried Giant book as a prize either.
The Buried Giant. Yeah, that's the book that we read last month.
Yeah, yeah, and it. I'm not going to be happy, so just brace yourselves.
All right. Is the Buried Giant the return for me?
I think so. I think so. I finally have a book to hate more than Robinson Crusoe.
Oh, man. Robinson Crusoe wasn't that bad.
It was repetitive, and it was overwritten, and it was a waste of my time.
It was repetitive. I have a theory that because it was a serial, like back in those days, novels were basically just showed up in a newspaper like once a week or whatever. I think, you know, after a few chapters, you'd forget he'd already written about something and just write it again.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was kind of like reading James Fenimore Cooper all over again. Here, I'm going to tell you about every blade of grass outside this forest in this little patch. And you're going to become intimate with every blade of grass.
Yeah, I think, where did you read Robinson Crusoe?
At school. Studies in Fiction, I think.
At Pacific University?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's where I read it too. I think it's considered like the first novel. Like how people, even though it was technically not a novel, it was gathered into a novel. And it was just kind of like the godfather of novelization. So it's kind of almost like a history document.
Yeah. Yeah. I could go with that. I mean, on that note, I mean, it's important in its own right, but, I got no enjoyment from reading that book.
It can still suck.
Yes. Even things of great historical significance can still suck.
It wasn't even like the main character was even that likable.
Oh, he was a douchebag. He was a privileged little shoebuckle douchebag.
All right. Hey, but he was a hard worker, man.
Only because he had to be.
He was industrializing the shit out of that island.
True. True.
That's our Robinson Crusoe sidebar.
Sidebar.
That's the type of beautiful insight you can get when you join the Bring Your Own Book Club podcast. So today we're going to talk about Hollywood Dreams. Steve went first last time, so I'm going first this time. This is his noir. Takes place in L.A. right before World War II. back in the day when we were confused about who we should fight for in World War II for some reason, and Nazism was gaining a foothold in America and fairly popular. Like any good detective story, it starts out with a dead lady on the beach. 154 pages into this. Found the detective Elijah Toome is our main detective. He's got a partner, Monty. And they found this woman on the beach. And they've been picking up these clues. Now Toome thinks that maybe one of his old acquaintances from his rum running and speakeasy running days is involved, a high class citizen in the art dealing world with some Germanic background, shall we say?
Indeed.
All right. I'm going to prepare you. So typically workshop rules are start with the nice stuff, the positive things, and then work on the sterner critiques. But since it's just that's like a group setting, since the two of us, we just kind of go in order in the good and the bad, whatever order they come in. And I'm just going over that because I'm going to warn Steve that I'm about to bust his balls.
Oh, no.
Repeatedly.
Okay.
No, it won't be that bad. All right. So we are at Silvermatic Studios. Danny DeLuca, Toome's old friend, runs this studio. He's kind of held over his shady ways from the rum running days. And the girl who's dead used to work at his studio. Toome's kind of suspecting him working with Richter, the guy who's starting to become his main suspect. I'm sure there's more to that as we explore this, because I don't think Danny's like a killer or anything. So they're at Silvermatic Studios. I'm assuming it's Nazis. We don't actually know who broke in and was going to steal some stuff, but a security guard stopped them. Security guard killed, and Anna, Toome's daughter, who works with Danny for Danny, was in the crossfire. And so we left off in the middle of all that, and now they're in Danny's office and discussing her getting information for Danny. So the new stuff is Danny enters his office and raises his eyebrow as he passes me and kneels down next to Anna and puts his hands on her. You weren't hurt at all, were you? And this is page 154. Hey, and if you go to our website, patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project, you can find this and follow along. Makes it a little bit easier. So actually, I just thought of this. I didn't think about this my first read through, but now I'm thinking about it now, because maybe he should like take his hands on in her, maybe like he takes her hands in his or something like that. Cause puts his hand on hers. Oh, I misread it. Never mind. Stay that. Puts his hand on hers. All right. That makes more sense. I read originally as he was putting his hands on her, and I was like, that's a little weird. But I didn't mark that, so we can forget that. I thought it was weird that he called her that she called him Mr. DeLuca. It kind of feels out of place in this scene. I mean, she's known him like her entire life. And I see the Mr. DeLuca during the daytime for professionalism's sake. But after hours, after being nearly killed.
That's fair.
Danny squeezes her hand and bows his head. He's dead, Anna. He says about the security guard. But it was a good death. I also thought that line was a little weird. Like I suddenly was in a gladiator story or a Klingon story.
Kapla!
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 That's the only Klingon word I know. Kapla!
I know Kapla and Patak, and Patak's not good.
If you hear that word, good things aren't about to happen.
Exactly.
Yeah, then they had just had like a whole section here about them conversing about good deaths. Maybe if there was like six bodies around him before he went down, it would have been a good death.
Fair enough.
Anyway, that just felt a little out of place.
All right.
Page 155. In the middle of page 155, Danny's kind of settled back in a business and wants to kind of get out of his office because their friendship has been strained for a while. And on his way out, he turns to Danny and says, I'm getting my bungalow fumigated next week and need a place to stay. One of the guys at the station recommended the Pally House in Santa Monica ever stay there. And that's important because he's got a clue that Danny is holding up the dead girl's sister at the Pally House. Yeah, that seemed a little overt. I wonder if he was just trying to shake something loose there.
Yeah.
But it seemed like unless he was going direct to the Pally House from there, then maybe that was a little too early. I don't know if that matters or not. I mean, Tomb's not always the brightest guy in the world.
True. Gives me something to think about, though.
And of course, Danny's place dumb. Can't say I have. So him and Monty, they're not actually on the case of these dead guys. Some other guys are on the case. And we've already talked to those cops in the last episode. So at the bottom of that page, 155. So Monty arrives after the break-in. Oh, he's talking to Anna. So Monty arrives after the break-in. Where were you during it, I ask. 156, she says she hid in mom's old office. And they kind of share a moment because the mom's dead. So they share a little moment about remembering her working there. And we get down to, so I changed this one line suggested change near the bottom of 156 because the scene change was super abrupt. They were standing at Danny's talking, and then the next sentence they were at the sidewalk in front of her apartment or the parking lot of her apartment or, you know, in her apartment. So I just suggested this sentence: we sit curbside in front of Anna's apartment after a quiet drive from the studio, since you said that she wasn't talking or anything. It's just a smooth transition.
Okay.
157. No real comments, just some grammar edited suggestions throughout that page. Page 158, down in the middle, can I see your registration book, I ask, inside if it will help at all, since we don't know when Elsa may have been checked in the hotel. That sentence is...
Yeah, I see what you mean there.
And at the bottom of the page, I just had a comment, oh snap, that Danny's hiding there under Tomb's dead wife's name.
Yeah, at least the first name anyway.
Oh, I just assumed Ingalls was her maiden name, but was that just some random name you picked up?
Just some random name. I was like,
okay.
I was like, the first name, okay, but he wouldn't use, you know, I was like, he wouldn't use her full real name because... anybody that knows him would, you know, recognize that name, maybe.
Yeah. So was Ingalls some, like, secret shout-out to Little House on the Prairie?
No. It was just one that I picked out. I was looking at surnames for the region during that time.
159, just some edits and grammar suggestions. In the comments section, I pasted the definition of maroknaz because I had to look it up. And then I thought, hey, if somebody's actually following us, maybe they would want to know what that is too. So I just pasted that there.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And I thought that was interesting. I think that was a new description of the Pally House.
Yeah, it kind of had like a Persian Ottoman motif in the architecture on the inside. From what I had read about it back in the day.
Okay. So was this one of the places that didn't have pictures on the inside?
I couldn't find any pictures, but I found, like, you know, some, like, descriptions of, like, what it used to look like and stuff like that. I don't know if it still has the same motif. It costs money to go to Santa Monica, and I don't have money.
Wow, that's weird. Do you think there'd be some new pictures on the internet now that everybody take pictures of everything?
You'd think so. I mean, I can find, like, pictures of the rooms, but I can't find, like, really good, any good pictures of the lobby.
The lobbies and stuff, yeah. All right. Some minor grammar suggestions on the rest of that page. Page 160. Also on page 159, they go knock on the door and they find the girl. And she wants to know how they are. who they how they can prove who they are. I take out my wallet from my coat, fish crease a photo from it, and stare at it for a moment. Vivian hanging on me, Danny and Lou next to us, in front of my jalopy when it shined. My only comment was just like, didn't he have a badge or something? And like an ID with his badge.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I guess so.
No other comments on that page. Anyway, he shows in the picture, and she does know Danny, and that's a picture of him with Danny, so.
Yeah,
you know. She opens up, and they just immediately are like, so what's going on? Because her brother's in town, and he's still in the hospital, right? Because he got his ass beat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's still in the hospital.
So, yeah, they're like, what's going on? And that carries over into 161. And a lot of this conversation looks intact from your first draft. Didn't have a... Well, yeah, I didn't have anything to say on these page 161.
Yeah, I gutted a lot of stuff out of this.
But they're just going through... This is the regular cop routine, asking the questions. Would anybody want to hurt your sister? Do you have any idea who did this, etc.? That goes through page 162, where she's like, yeah, it doesn't matter. These people are crazy. You can't protect me. 163. I had a question about this. How do you know about the Nazis here? Elsa asked. Because we've been chasing our tails looking for your sister's killer. We came across a few things. We found a roll of film she had developed. And I know the maintenance man at your building was watching you and your sister. So this sounds like he was a spy. It almost seems like a holdover from when you had the Spear of Destiny in this thing.
A little bit. I mean, that was Lloyd.
Because, like, why would they be watching her?
For the film.
Watching her for the film?
Yeah, the role of film.
Oh, but I thought she was already dead.
I don't know what you're saying.
Nancy, the dead woman, the sister.
Uh-huh.
I thought she was killed because she had discovered something about Richter that he was doing that was illegal.
Yes.
I guess I'm confused on why they were being watched. I guess I always pictured it spur of the moment murder.
Oh, gotcha.
And not like, hey, I think this woman knows something about me. Why don't you watch her type murder?
Gotcha. No, I mean, I was working around the idea of the roll of film and the film that they end up getting from that developing camera shop.
Right.
That's why their apartment is totally tossed when they find it.
Right.
I don't know. I kind of pictured him kind of like keeping tabs on them in an effort to find this film, and that's why she ends up dead. Is because they necessarily didn't want to kill her, but it kind of ends up them killing her. That's why they end up ditching the body and, you know, stuff like that.
Okay. Oh.
Kind of where I was going with it. But yeah. So, I mean, but that kind of throws that into confusion for you.
All right. Well, we'll see how that, shakes out.
Okay.
And I just like the comment, her jawline and chin have a Hepburn quality about them, but she seems more Fay Wray to me. 164. So on page 164, when they walked in, there was that black car across the street.
Yeah.
Which had Monty's radar up. So he says they're coming across the street, and then two sentences later, they're kicking in the door. And I'd say that just felt very quick to me.
Gotcha.
Like maybe there needs more time, them convincing her to leave or her running in her other room and getting something or whatever.
Okay.
Something that delays them leaving or whatever, but 1 second they're on the street and the next they're kicking in the door.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Or you could be like, maybe Monty goes back to the window because they're questioning her, right?
Yeah.
And be like, Tomb, those guys have left those goons have left the car. Look, the car's empty.
Just give them more clear passage of time.
And then the next paragraph, the molding around the door splits from the wall as the door swings open and two men enter the room. I slip between the curtains onto the porch. I didn't actually know Monty was gone at this point.
Oh, I think I forgot to put something in. Yeah.
Monty's baby blue Plymouth rolls up and I hop in. Just the way it's written right now. That's kind of like the same thing with the guys crossing the street. It's just like, wow, that was really fast. Page 165, third sentence. I holster my gun and look back at terrified Elsa. Who are these guys? You wouldn't believe me if I told you. Well, they were just discussing Nazis like a page and a half ago.
Yeah.
All right. Was that the last page?
Yeah.
And it ends up with them going to Lou's to hide her. Lou being his old speakeasy buddy who owns the old speakeasy bar, and they like to hide in the old speakeasy.
Yeah, I'm still going with that route. It could change. That's why I kind of left off there, because I was like, do I want to have him go back there again, or do I want to try something else? So I'm mulling some stuff over.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Like I liked it in the last version. My only critique for that last version really was that I had a hard time picturing the hiding place because the way it was described felt kind of like more like a closet than a whole other bar.
That's fair.
Like I kind of pictured it as a bar in the basement. I mean, that's how speakeasies were, right? You go upstairs and everything is all like family stuff. And then you go knock on the door down to the basement, and then the basement's all a luxurious gambling drinking hall.
What's the password?
The Roger, a Jennifer Rabbit type lady singing.
Yeah. And the bouncer, nice monkey suit. Yeah. Actually, I was kind of thinking about putting the speakeasy in the basement, as opposed to kind of how I had it written before. Cause yeah, definitely how I had it written before, I don't think quite worked.
We need another brainstorming session.
Yeah.
And I don't particularly want to go to the library again, but I feel like I need a giant whiteboard to write stuff on.
Whiteboards are fun for that. Indeed.
Yeah. Breaking down our story structures and whatnot.
Okay. I guess I'll start into Jason's untitled project. And we have a section one. I thought this was an interesting piece. Kind of starts out with the meteor, if you will. Coming out of the sky and crashing into the earth. And at first I wasn't sure like what kind of place I was in here. Like if I was like in current day, if I was like in, you know, like, Homesteader, Kansas or, medieval or whatever, not medieval, but you know, some sort of like fantasy kind of setting. So it was an interesting immersion into the world building that kind of went on. And it kept me asking questions as I was going, which is good.
Not like what the fuck type questions?
No, not what the fuck. I just ended up having questions. I was like when it mentions the dog, I was like, what kind of dog? I was like, it's not a big deal, but I kind of want to know what kind of dog this is. let's see. I noticed you got to go through and indent things. Nothing was indented.
It pasted that way, and I was like, yeah, whatever.
So I liked the description of the meteor. Line of light like a rapier swipe, because I mean, That kind of sword, like swiping through the air, has a certain look to it, especially like if it's in an arcing swipe, and it conjured a good mental image. Hardwin Ardenson. I noticed his full name is used every time he's mentioned.
Yes, because in my first version of this, he was the man. And then when I decided on his name, I just copied and replaced everything. Did a copy and replace for everything.
Okay. No, I just made a comment for repetition. And it places repetition in proximity. But I had a feeling that as much as I saw it, I kind of had a feeling you might have done find and replace.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in here named, like, you know, it's like the credits on a movie. Goon 1, Goon 2. There's one guy in there. I think I call him the pompous ass or whatever, like every time.
Nice.
Because I don't have any names.
Who's that guy? Pompous ass. Really? You ever met him before? No. Well, twice.
No, but twice.
Page 2. The full name of the character again.
Oh, I say, yeah, that's going to be in all 300 pages of the book, so you don't even know that.
I'll just skip it for now. I liked this line here. Rats would rise out of the cellars to feast on the remains of whatever, whoever was cast aside in the wake of whatever bloodletting the king used this event to justify. And I was like, I like this. However, I was a little lost in the whole king thing. And I was like, is this land under a monarchy? I was like, I have questions.
Oh, okay.
Let's see, a little further down the page. He looked at Hardwin and Ardenson. I keep wanting to call him Andreessen. Ardenson with concerned eyes above his long snout. I think there was a word missing there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the dog's a healer, a blue healer, from what I get from the blue fur and large black patches. So the kind of dog thing was answered. I was like, okay, cool. And then down at the bottom of page 2, so day and night rides were equally likely to get somebody robbed. So days and nights were both bad?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I just want to make sure that wasn't a typo or...
Oh, no. These days... A night ride.
Okay. That makes more sense then.
We're equally likely to get you robbed by a king's guard as would a bandit. I believe that's what I was going for.
I was like, well, why not just ride out now then? If, you know, why are you waiting for daytime at this point? For page 3, I like the description of the house and how it does some double duty, not only about the house, but also Hardwin's kind of status, relationship status, and his economic status, I guess, too. But also how he just kind of has like a humble living style that he just likes to go with. Nothing too fancy or overt. Let's see, page 4. On the right was a dining table, 9 feet in length. It had been a long time since it had been full of people. Many of them were dead now, others too busy with their own miseries to come share them. And I like that use of inventory to kind of show how kind of lonely this person is, how lonely this guy is, and kind of, but also kind of like how starved he might also be on the other end of that loneliness for communion with others. So, I mean, there's got to be some woe is me for not having people at my table to share in my misery.
You're doing a lot of British accents today for some reason.
I don't know. I'm just kind of on it. I can't help it.
Some sort of accent.
Yeah, you know, just filling the Brits today, I guess. You know, it's my lineage that's coming back to haunt me.
That's what we're reading.
That could probably play into it too. Let's see. He set his hand on the dog's neck and rubbed it while he gazed at the sword above. And I was just wondering what the sword was above, the fireplace. And it's like, there's so much detail about the home before this. I was like, okay, I'm not letting him get away with this. I want to know where the sword is. And then I see you have a note for yourself here, or is it for the reader?
No, that's for me.
Okay. I was like, should this be in parentheses? But I was like, maybe not. I was like, I don't know. I mean, because like, actually, some books that I've come across will be like, well, this thing that we'll talk about later, and you know, so it's like, I was like, is this that?
Oh no, it's not that. Much like the character, it's got a name, but I didn't know what to name it.
Yeah, I was like, is he being a cheeky bastard? let's see here. And I did a little sentence edit down below the to be named later. It was it curved slightly in the last foot, and it could be wielded by one or two hands with equal effectiveness. The way I read before was just a little awkward.
Okay.
Who's the apprentice? Was he the apprentice when he killed the stag, or was it his apprentice or the king's apprentice?
Yes.
All the above.
Okay. All the above.
All right.
It's part of the process. When you're an apprentice in this order, which I still haven't named, I'm still just calling it the order. One of the things you had to do was hunt and kill the stag.
Okay. So it was like a rite of passage kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's written. It's just written badly.
Ah, fair enough. But that's why we're doing this. Let's see, page 5. Word. I saw this word Kai, and I was like, attention Bajoran workers. It was just in the back of my mind. I was like, ha-ha.
When I put Kai there, I don't know where that came from.
Ah, no worries. It works. I mean, I was like, I read the word Kai, and I was like, okay, so it was. The Kai's a very important penis.
Oh my God. Have you seen that new commercial with the actor who ran Cobra Kai and Karate Kid?
No. Uh-uh.
Oh my God. It is so funny. I'll send it to you later.
All right. Do it. Yeah. I'll give it a watch. Okay. Yeah. Here's about the, so every apprentice or every initiation, every trainee had to apprentice to a master smith to create their own sword. I like that. That's cool. So the horns were carved into the length of the handles. So the horns were the handles.
No, the horns are the cross guard.
Ah, the cross guard. Okay. Gotcha. I didn't get that out of that sentence though.
Okay.
I just didn't see that as being the cross guard. Page 6. This part here that I have highlighted needs a little TLC. An encounter only put other parties and a person who introduces a weapon to the equation usually ends up using it, as the mere presence of a weapon can change the very natures of... Yeah.
That...
Needs a little attention.
That used to say, the man who wields it.
Yep. Behold the dangers of find and replace.
Yeah.
That's funny.
That one where you crossed out introduces?
Uh-huh.
That capital R-O-D, that's from something too. I don't remember what I did there, but it just dropped capital R-O-Ds in the middle of any word that had R-O-D into it.
That's funny. Yeah, I was wondering how that went down. I was like, huh. Okay.
It was nano too, so there's gonna be all kinds of crazy stuff.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple other instances with some rogue capitalized letters here and there. But All good. Okay, page 7. Hardwin is on his way out to go investigate this crater, this thing that fell from the sky. I thought this was interesting when he's riding out and he's looking at his livestock and think about like when he's going to take them to market and like how modest his estate is compared to like the people around him. And how he doesn't really have workers that stay on like the entire time, and just how hiring people to do stuff for him was just unappealing. And I was like, so he settled into a life of mediocrity. Serving as king paid off well for this guy. I like that he's a more humble landowner and just isn't some robber baron.
Yeah, he just has this small following. He's actually very wealthy.
Yeah, he's actually, from what I gathered at the beginning of the story, I mean, he's really set, but he has a very humble lifestyle, which kind of makes this, which makes this character kind of endearing, because money changes people. I just had some short edit. I just had some small little edits, just cutting out a word here or there, the rest of this page. Page 8. So this is where he gets to the pit, and he's looking at the pit, and the pit was about 50 in diameter, 50 feet. I was like, 50 what? Because it just says 50 in diameter. So I was like, 50 feet, 50 meters, 50, you know, whatever.
Okay.
It was another 30 feet to the bottom, and he saw nothing. The grass around him was charred and burnt. The dirt of the crater's rim crunched under his boots like glass, something he had only seen in the largest of cities and richest estates. I like the description of the crater with the burnt grass and the slope in the edges, and I thought the glass was a nice touch. Just shows how hot that whatever had fallen was burning. Page 9. And I was wondering about this. About halfway up the road, he heard the sound of music and hoofbeats. And I was like, do his neighbors travel with bards? Wouldn't he think the music strange, or is the music really just doing a number on him? Is the music just something he's hearing in his head? But then I know you get to the girl with the pan pipe. So that must have been what the music was. Because I was like,
you think you should have more reaction
To the music? Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, the music would probably be closer to his perspective than what the approaching hoofbeats would be, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think in proximity, the music would probably have more of an effect on him, I would think.
Okay.
So the strange girl with the panpipe is like doing tricks on Clyde's back, like standing on his hindquarters and just kind of like being, look at me all nimbly bimbly. Thought that was cool. Definitely gives kind of an extraordinary quality to this person that's just kind of like appeared, which is kind of weird on its own right. And I liked the description of the strange girl's hair, and the grass that's kind of sticking out of it. Not the white of an old woman, but the bright, energetic white of a twinkling star, despite the pieces of grass that were sticking out of it. I liked that. Gives kind of like an extraordinary quality with like kind of like a tussled, unkempt quality, I guess. Page 10. Just had some little edits on this page, not a whole lot going on. Let's see. Then this is Hardwin trying to get his horse Clyde under control, but the girl's still blowing on her pipe and kind of showing him up. And then finally Clyde comes to him. So this girl, definitely there's a mysterious element about this girl, which I found interesting, because it's like she just comes out of nowhere. But it even gets a little weirder with her, too, as it goes along.
Yes.
Page 11. So Hardwin's trying to get this girl to talk to him, and she's just, you know, kind of like, I do what I want. And I thought it was funny. Kind of had a little laugh when Clyde speaks up by clicking his teeth, and the dog, you know, gives an excited bark. And he's like, are you two taking her side? And it was just, yeah, a little moment of brevity there. I liked it. And this is when we get Can Derwin that shows up with his leisure wagon being pulled by two horses. And he's like, oh, this is a horrible wagon. I should be on a road, but there's no road to go where he was going. So, and then let's see the description. He was an older man. This bottom of page 11. He was an older man, well past middle age and somewhere in his 60s. He had slightly protruding pouch of a stomach. And this goes down to page 12. His arms and legs. And it stops in a period. So I was just like, well, what about his arms and legs? And then they start talking about the kid, and he's like, I didn't know you had a child. And he's like, I don't. And so the mystery for her kind of goes on between these two guys talking about her. Then they kind of talk a little bit about retirement and their property and proximity of each other. You know, the banter works out well between these two, I think. I didn't see anything that was that really, you know, stood out at me like, you know, oh, this isn't working. It all kind of had a good flow to it, and it made sense. It had a good what's the word I'm looking for?
Flow, realism.
Yeah, we'll just go with flow. page 13. They talk about, you know, if there's anything worth digging out of the pit, and Hardwin's like, no. There was nothing in there except for the glass rock. So he ends up going down to Can Derwin's place, to eat. And Can's like, you know, hey, you should come out. You should come over and check out my daughter. You know what I mean? Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
Oh, where'd the accent go? Why were you suddenly like an old timey radio announcer?
I don't know. I'm all over the place today, man. If I contradict myself, then I contradict myself. I contain multitudes.
Nobody puts you in a box.
Nobody. Yeah, then Can's kind of mean, man. Besides, you need some sort of company out there besides this old horse and flea bit mud of yours. Oh, dude. Oh, poor puppy. He's calling the dog a flea bit and mutt. That's not very nice. But the girl like nods in vigorous agreement with what he said. And he's like, I'm supposed to be retired. And he's like, aren't we all, my friend? Yeah, I like the progression here. As they're preparing to head down to Can's place, and then they get down to Can's place. And we start to get an introduction of the place, and Ken Derwin's place was significantly larger than Hardwin Anderson's. It was a long building built by his grandfather. And I had made the comment of, didn't Derwin get the land from the newer king when he retired, or did I miss something?
No, I haven't really said yet. Can's a merchant.
Okay. Maybe it was the other guy that got his land from the newer king that's on the other side of...
Randall John.
Yeah. Must have been him that...
Cause I, think a page or two, Can starts talking about his business stuff.
Yes, he does. Okay, it must have been John then that I was thinking about that had got his land from the newer king. I know there was a comment on it somewhere here, and I didn't highlight it, and I should have.
Oh, I just noticed. I have a part where I write, I'm going to call the sons Bob and Bill or something for now. But I just noticed before that, I actually do have names for them. I forgot I named them.
Oh, that's funny. And I missed that, I think.
And then sometimes I think of a good name, and I'm like, ooh, I like that name. I don't want to waste it on this guy who's only going to be here for two pages.
Right? Yeah, no doubt, dude. Yeah, why waste a good thing on, you know, just a brief character?
I should have like this thing through my books where just like almost everybody's named Joe.
That'd be funny. Okay, so we're inside the Can residence on page 15. There's two fireplaces. So this guy's like two fireplace Can.
Yeah.
And so the people on the end of the table, like, they end up sweating through their dinner. I thought that was funny. Like, whoever would sit there would end up sweating through their dinner. And then, like, Martha, his wife, seats Hardwin next to the daughter they want to try to hook him up with. And he's, like, tremendously old at 38. And she's, like, what, probably, like...
She's, like, 16.
18? 16, 17? Okay. As would be the age of the times for being an adult. Because, you know, people died at, like, what?
38.
Yeah. And then we get a description here of Hardwin. He was tall and still well-muscled. There was no gray in his brown hair or beard, which were still thick, though well-groomed. So we get a description of him 15 pages in. I think that, I mean, for a larger work, I think that's all right. I mean, because we get stuff about him earlier in the book, kind of like what kind of person he is, and then we get like a physical description of him later. I didn't really see much of a problem with it coming later in the book. I thought it was fine. And then down at the bottom of page 15, Can led him to a study. There was a desk that faced the window. Can commented his big head cast a shadow on the desk, and so he turned it to its untraditional location to ensure all the light from the day hit it. Now, was he talking about Can's big head? Was he talking about his own big head or Artisan's big head?
Yeah, his own head.
All right. It was just, yeah, I don't know. I guess it was just the way I read it. I was like, is he saying Artisan has a big head and like to get out of his light? Or... And then, okay, so Can sits down. So they retire to, like, I guess Can's, like,
man cave,
resting room or whatever, man cave. And he doesn't seem to notice this girl climbing into his lap. And she lays her head against Can's chest, and he just strokes her hair absentmindedly. I thought that was weird. This, like, strange kid is just, like, climbing on him, and he's just like, da-da-da-da-da, you know, doesn't really notice, yep. You know. I just thought it was weird. Yeah, like he was petting a dog or indulging one of his own children. Hardwin Artinson thought about telling the girl to leave but decided not to. There was no harm in her being here. In his other hand, he swirled his drink, took a deep breath of it, and took a sip. Hardwin Artinson did the same as was pleased by the sweet smoky taste. I can't talk today for some reason. I didn't notice this earlier on my other read through. In his other hand, he swirled his drink, took a deep breath of it, and took a sip. In relation to how the sentences are arranged, I'm not sure who this is talking about.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I think it's Can, but I'm not sure. So just, yeah. Okay. Then they start talking about Ankar, which I guess is like what, the capital or like,
yeah. And I end up calling it the city, the rest of the document for some reason, cause I forgot I named it.
Oh, fair enough. Well, hey, that'll be a final replace moment to have.
See how that works out.
Indeed. Let's see. Once per year, I take some cattle there for sale. He's like, you really do keep to yourself. And he's like, makes things less complicated. And then we kind of get talking about the order a little bit. Can kind of talk some shit about the new king, Horus II, being unbalanced. Favors to all his sycophants. And then I like this line, what kind of men are we if we don't at least try to be voices of reason? And he's like, breathing. Because, you know, under a monarchy, it's just like, off with his head. Here, let's see. So they're talking, they kind of talk politics a little bit. And then it's like, well, you know, let's not talk about this anymore. Which kind of, that's sometimes how those conversations go, which is usually preferred, let's not talk about this. I found another rogue capitalized letter in disorder on the bottom of 17. All right, page 18. I had like nothing to say on this page at all. I had a couple minor edits. They end up talking about weather, crop, stock prices, cost of brandy. And dude, Ken Derwin has an indentured servant because he's a bad person.
That's a contract.
it's indentured servitude. You can legally work your people to death because they're no longer people. They're dehumanized. Contracts do not... what's the word I'm looking for? Contracts do not define morality.
All right.
But hey, you know, not everybody can be good all the time.
I guess not.
Okay, so the boys have gone up to check out the crater because they don't believe Hardwin when he told them there was nothing there. So they took the wagon and they go up there. So Can asks him a favor to stop by and check on him on his way back. And he's taking the girl with the pan flute with him. And I thought this took an interesting turn with the soldiers that were there with the boys and the state of that the boys were in too. Gods help us when the Mon come up. Is that supposed to be sun? Moon. Okay. So is this a polytheistic society? Yes. Okay, cool. So I did read that right. Okay. The blood moon, which they get all superstitious about, and they get superstitious every year around the harvest time, which is pretty much par for the course. And I see where you had the city.
Oh yeah.
So when he comes over, so he leaves and comes across Jim and Bob, and Jim is laid out unmoving on the ground, and Bob's sitting on the ground with a dazed look near the wagon. And one of the dogs is dead. Poor puppy. The side of his face was bloody. Is this the dog's face or Bob's face?
It's Bob's face.
Because it comes after the dog being a hacked up bloody mess, and it just says the side of this face was bloody. So it made me think of like the dog instead of Bob.
I can see that. I like that. You want me to highlight that? I'll highlight it.
And then I noticed the black eye on the back of the uniform. So the symbol of the order had changed from a phoenix to a black eye.
Yeah. I'm actually gonna change it.
Is it just gonna stay the same, or is it still gonna like be a change symbol?
No, it's just gonna be the same uniform it's always been.
Oh, okay. Okay. And I thought this was kind of rough. Get down, Hardwin Ardenson said to the girl. The girl shook her head and Hardwin Ardenson grabbed her arm firmly. Get down or I'll throw you down. Yeah. I was like, whoa, damn. And then so finally she sighs and slides off. And he tells the dog to stay. Now, what I thought was interesting was these soldiers are complete jerks. But he ends up like finding one guy there that like he recognizes. And like this one guy like knows Hardwin is like, or was it?
Are you looking for their exchange?
Corporal Dugan. Yeah, I just found it. 22, page 22. Yeah, so this guy got demoted and he was like, he's like the one guy that Hardwin like talks to with reason. Because the other people are just complete dicks, from what I gathered from my reading about the other guys. Demoted a few weeks ago. Other dude wants to have a pissing contest. The lieutenant, I'm in charge here, and I'm the one talking. And Hardwin just kind of like whatever. Let's see, where is that? I should have highlighted it.
Oh, page 23.
Oh yeah, that's, and then think of a really cool name later. So Hardwin has like a notoriety about him. He has some kind of like legend attached to his name, I guess. I'm curious as to what that is because it doesn't really go into it, at least not yet anyway. But I thought it was cool how Hardwin like pulls the guy down to him, and he has that dagger, you know, about ready to go up into his throat or underside of his chin. Kind of puts the lieutenant in his place. I kind of like how that goes. I like how that goes down. And the other guys, he has the other guys go down and get the other dog. They tossed into the pit. So the whole interaction with these soldiers, I thought was good. And it was definitely, we get to see a different side of Hardwin that we haven't seen yet in the story. We see more of a sharper, edgier, person, kind of more reminiscent on being a part of this order and not the lonely retiree that we start the story with. So I think in just how much this character kind of reveals about himself or kind of grows into or reveals, I think is a good progression up to this point.
Cool. Thanks.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no prop. And then gets the boys loaded up into the wagon and takes the wagon back to Can Derwin's place. And the girl's playing her pipe and Clyde's running circles around the wagon. And I think that was a good place to leave off because I'm kind of wondering how Can Derwin and his failing stature, or at least stature that's not as strong as it was politically or in the court, if you will. I'm wondering how that's going to play out and how much more Hardwin Ardenson's going to get sucked into this imbalance or this change to his order that's clearly affecting people around him that will probably affect him and what he just did.
Post this one up a few times, and as I try to sort out what I'm trying to do with Ghost, maybe next weekend when I'm over and come over early, we can chat about what I'm thinking about doing with that. Because I'm thinking about doing some kind of major changes, but I don't know how they'll work.
Yeah, that's fair. Major changes, man. I mean, it's like hell. Just looking at what I've been trying to do with my story. I mean, I've had to pretty much, on my second draft, I've had to do rough draft stuff in my second draft. So I mean, yeah, totally understand your concerns. And if you want to talk out what you're thinking, what you're wanting to try to do. Yeah, most definitely.
All right. Well, thanks for that. And I don't have any questions or other comments. Anything on your mind before we depart?
No, not right now, I don't think.
All right, then. So, patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project. Check out our Bring Your Own Book Club. And you can also find copies of our drafts there, so you can read along. It's easier to see what we're talking about and the changes we made and why we made them. And we'll be talking about the Buried Giant. Oh, man. And I didn't look up his name. I always tell myself, write down his name before you start talking about the buried giant, and I never do. So that's how professional we are around here. So yeah. Buried Giant will be coming out in a few days by the gentleman who wrote Remains of the Day. And we just decided before starting this podcast, that we're going to do The Road for next month, because The Road is also our alumni Pacific University quarterly book club book. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to do The Road by Cormac McCarthy. Wait, did I get that last name right? McCarthy?
I'm pretty sure you did.
And I've read The Road before. I should say I've listened to it on tape before, and I thought it was really good. I think you're gonna enjoy it, Steve.
I think so. I mean, I saw the movie like not long after my dad died. And yeah, it didn't sit well with me.
It's not a jolly movie. It's not a feel-good family movie.
No. it's sad. I'm going to have to brace myself.
It's kind of sad. It's actually a little frightening, but it's just really amazingly written. And I think that'll carry it through. I think it, out of all the books that we've done, what, 6, 7 books now? I don't know if this is the best book, but I think it's the best written book out of all the books that we've read so far.
You're really talking this up. I mean, this is gonna have to really meet these expectations.
I know. Well, that's why I said it might not be the best. It might not be the best book we've read.
Fair enough.
I think you'll like it better than Buried
Giant. Oh yeah, I think I'll like anything better than the Buried Giant.
Except Robinson Crusoe. Good night, everybody. Remember, patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project, or you can go to PacificNovelProject.com and you can find the podcast there too. Good day, Steve. I'm gonna go watch some football. Something I know you hate.
Oh, I don't hate football. I just don't care who wins or loses. But yeah, I'm gonna go and do some things and stuff. Stuff and things, and I'll talk to you later, and thank you everybody for listening.
Good night, sir.
Good night.